Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. At Beth Emmanuel, we are proclaiming the vital gospel message of the coming kingdom of heaven. If you share our passion for this message, please support this teaching ministry and messianic community with your prayers and financial contributions. To learn how, click on the donate tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
On Shabbat mornings, we have been learning about the world of souls and really asking the question, is there immediate survival after death? Meaning, does human consciousness persist outside the body, even after the brain has ceased to function? Is it still aware, still carrying a sense of identity and connection with the life just lived in the body? That's the question. The question is not, is there life after death? We already know there's life after death and the future coming resurrection of the dead, which is one of the 13 basic beliefs of Judaism, and one that has been confirmed to us through the death and resurrection of our master and teacher, Rabbi Yeshua of Nazareth. So that's not the question. The question is, what happens to you, the you inside you, after you die, but before the resurrection? What's it like in the incorporeal world of souls? I already told you the story in the Talmud about Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi's son who became ill and fell into a comatose state, as it were. And when he recovered, he said, I saw an upside-down world where those on top are underneath and those underneath are on top. And Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said, my son, you saw the true world. And that's why we call the world of souls the world of truth. In the previous teaching, I identified your soul as the consciousness within you, your sense of sentient self-awareness, which exists independent of your thoughts, emotions, feelings, experiences, and memories. It's the real you behind all of that. And we talked about how the consciousness, the divine soul, is not created by the brain, like an operating system running on a computer, but rather it is received by the brain, more like a radio receiving a transmission. And we talked about how if the soul lives on after death, independent of the body, it makes sense then to suppose that it also existed before the body. Judaism teaches that all souls were created during the original 6 days of creation. So we talked about how Judaism teaches that all souls pre-exist their entry into human bodies and are conscious of their decision to enter the material world, but they forget everything when they're born, for the most part. Some children retain a few fleeting memories of choosing their parents, agreeing to be born, or agreeing to their mission in the world, and they say things like, I remember being in heaven with God before I was born. This time we're going to look at the question from a completely different angle. Not from the perspective of the fading memories of 2 to 5 year old children, but rather from the perspective of those who claim to have crossed over, experienced death, and then returned, being revived from death. Such an experience is called a near-death experience, or NDE for short. It's a well-documented phenomenon in medical science, but controversial and poorly understood. Everyone has heard of NDEs, near-death experiences. I realized just how ubiquitous knowledge of the NDE had become in popular culture when watching the movie Shrek with my kids some 16 years ago, and Donkey warns his ogre friend, Shrek, "Don't die, Shrek, and if you see a long tunnel, stay away from the light." Here's the premise of an NDE. A person dies and is clinically dead, meaning all brain function stops for a period of time. A short period or a long period, but then somehow the person is revived and the brain reboots. You would expect that while the brain was flatlined, the person should be completely unconscious and have no dreams, thoughts, memories, or experiences, not until the neurons start firing again and brain activity resumes. For many people, that is the case. They have no memory of anything until revived. But some people report being conscious the entire time, feeling themselves leave their body, hovering over their body, looking back down at their body, feeling a sensation of peace and bliss, then passing on, meeting other people from the beyond, seeing a tunnel with a light at the end, going down the tunnel, being sent back, then abruptly being returned to their bodies, often against their will. That's an NDE. What if it was true? What if those subjective experiences could actually tell us something about the hereafter and the world of souls? That would certainly help settle our question about immediate survival after death. So where do you find near-death experiencers? Well, we can find them in the Gospels. Once our master was summoned to the house of Yair, the head of the synagogue in Capernaum, and they brought him to the room of Yair's 12-year-old daughter, and the girl was already dead, and the mourners had started their keening. But our master sent everyone out of the room, took the girl by the hand, said, "Little girl, get up." And what happened? Luke 8:55 says, "And her spirit returned, and she got up immediately, and he gave orders for something to be given her to eat. He revived her from death, and her spirit returned." Where had it been that it needed to return? Once he came upon a funeral procession outside the village of Nain, and he saw that the dead man was the only son of a widow, and moved with compassion, he raised the boy from the dead, like Elijah or Elisha, and gave him back to his mother. Once he came to the tomb of his friend Lazar, more than 3 days after they had closed the tomb, and he told them to open the tomb, and he called to his friend, "Lazar, come forth." And the dead man woke up and came shambling out of the tomb, still dressed in the burial garments. Once a woman named Tabitha from the community of Joppa died, and they conducted her to Hara and prepared her for burial. But before they buried her, the apostle Peter came and sent away the shomrim and the mourners, and he said to the corpse, "Tabitha, arise." And there are more stories like this. Paul raised Eutychus, the boy who fell from the window. They say John raised a young man in Ephesus. And these stories are similar to the stories of Elijah and Elisha. And don't forget that at the hour of death, the death of our master, many holy men of Jerusalem who had died came out of their graves and entered the city, and they were later seen and recognized by others. So we know that it happens. These people all had, well, not just near-death experience, they had death experiences. What did they see? Did they remember anything? If we could interview them, would they be able to tell us anything about the world of souls? I probably first heard of near-death experiences in the early 1980s, but I never paid any attention to them or took them seriously at all because I thought medical science had a pretty reasonable sounding explanation. When the brain is dying, starved of oxygen, it releases a powerful concoction of endorphins and hallucinogenic chemicals that create a sensation of blissful peace like morphine and create the illusion of suddenly feeling weightless or feeling like you've left your body or seeing a bright light approaching. Well, that's one theory. Actually, there's dozens of theories in medical science to explain what happens and why people report all these hallucinations when they should be clinically dead. What is not so well known is that none of these theories have been proven true, and none of them are able to explain the whole of the phenomenon. But my attitude was basically, yeah, so maybe some people experience some hallucinations. Maybe they think they saw heaven or something. It's like a dream. The feverish dream of a dying brain. What can I say? I'm a skeptic. And skepticism has rarely steered me wrong. I used to say never. Now I say it has rarely steered me wrong. My middle name is Thomas, after all. I mean, there are some people who are believers. I'm an unbeliever, until I'm persuaded otherwise. But there was one story that did impress me a lot. My wife and I had a good friend named Jenny. She grew up in a Jewish family, not a very religious family. Jenny told us a story about when she was 5 years old or something like that. She had been playing in the street in front of their St. Paul home, and she was struck by a car and dragged beneath the car for almost a block. And she was rushed by ambulance to the hospital and considered probably brain dead, put on life support anyway. But as far as anyone knew, gone and dead, and she remained in this deep comatose state for days. I don't know how long, perhaps it was weeks. And then miraculously, she woke up. And when she woke up, the first thing she told everyone was that she had actually been to heaven and met the prophet Elijah, and he brought her back to her body, actually led her by the hand back to her body. I told my parents that story. And my mom said, maybe it was Jesus and she just thought it was Elijah. But my dad said, no, there's no reason it couldn't have been Elijah. For Jenny, there was no question. It was Elijah, Eliyahu. And she told us that if she ever had a son, she was going to name him Eliyahu. And she did. And she did. And I believed her. It reminds me of another story. One of the old men I used to study Midrash with had grown up in Jerusalem, and during Israel's war for independence, he became a member of the terrorist group called the Irgun, while his brother became a member of the Haganah. During the war, his brother was on patrol with three other Haganah soldiers when they were ambushed by Arabs with machine guns. All four soldiers were gunned down. My friend's brother was the only survivor, but he too nearly died. After he had recovered, he told the story of how, when he was shot, he felt himself slipping from his body, falling backwards into darkness as if into a great pit, when suddenly an old man with a white beard and bright blue eyes appeared and took hold of him by his collar and pulled him back up and said, "Not yet." And so he found himself back in his body, and he thought it was Abraham. But the other guys I was studying with in the class teased the man who told us the story, and they said, "I don't think so. Those blue eyes, maybe it was Yeshu." The Zohar tells us a story about a man who dies and leaves behind a young son and daughter. The little boy is staying with the corpse, and he keeps breathing into his dead father's mouth. It says, he had a young son who would let no one approach the bed of his father as he lay dead, but he himself kept close to him and wept over him, putting his mouth to his mouth. And he cries out to heaven, and he complains to God. He says, "In your Torah, you say you shall not take the mother with the young. You shall certainly let the mother go, but the young you may take for yourself. You should have taken my sister and I and let our mother live, but now you have taken both our mother and our father and left us." And between his prayers and sobs, it says, he had his lips pressed tight to the lips of his father. When Hashem heard the boy's prayer, heaven shuddered, and he consented to return the soul of the dead man, and the man wakes up. And the man wakes up and he tells them, "I was sent back, and I was told that I'm not allowed to reveal all that I saw for 12 years, but I am to remember it all. He made the angel of death return me to my body for another 22 years. Unfortunately, we never do get to hear the man's description. But that's not the case with the story of Nathan, the 15-year-old Israeli boy, who claimed to have left his body during Sukkot 2015 when he became very sick and he felt himself leave his body and he ascended to the world of souls and had all sorts of experiences. I watched an interview with him and I read a translation of the transcript, and I was astonished at how his experiences corresponded with Jewish eschatology and mystical Jewish teachings about the world of souls and biblical prophecy. The astonishing thing was that this 15-year-old kid, a normal kid, marginally observant Israeli kid who had never studied, never learned, never read this stuff, and yet he was describing things that one could have only learned from a serious study of Jewish texts, along with familiarity with the New Testament. It did not seem possible to me that this boy could have known about the things he described if he had not experienced them. Reports of out-of-body, near-death experiences have been around as long as human beings have been around. And they've come from every culture, regardless of religion. The earliest known description was reported by Plato, who heard the story of a warrior named son of Arminius, a Pamphylian who was slain in battle and left to rot on the battlefield with the other corpses for 10 days. But when they were taking up the corpses 10 days after the battle, his was still found intact. Nevertheless, they thought he was dead, and they were about to burn him on a funeral pyre 2 days later when he awoke, and he said, "When his soul went forth from his body, he journeyed along with a great host," presumably those who had been slain in the battle, "and they came to the place where the way divided, and the judges were seated before them, and the judges judged each individual for how he had lived. And the righteous they sent to the right and to heaven, and the wicked went the other direction and down to punishment. And before them were delights and visions of beauty beyond words, and souls coming and going, and a great light extending like a pillar resembling a rainbow, but brighter and purer. But the wicked were judged and sent the other direction to be repaid for any earthly suffering they had caused. Himself had a different experience with the judges. They told him that he needed to go back, that he was not done yet, but needed to return as a messenger to humanity to warn them. Here you see some common themes: leaving one's body, seeing others who are deceased, facing a judgment and life review, visions of beauties that cannot be expressed in human language, beautiful divine light, a place of punishment, and so on. We encounter this type of stuff with the apocalypses too. The one experiencing an apocalypse seems to leave his body, as Paul says, whether in the body or apart from the body, I do not know, God knows. I was caught up into paradise and heard inexpressible words which a man is not permitted to speak. It's a trip into the true world. And those who have gone over and crossed back sometimes do report seeing things on the level of an apocalypse. That was certainly the case for Nathan the Israeli boy. These stories appear here and there, but prior to 1960, near-death experiences were actually very rare, and you might never have heard of them at all, because prior to 1960, near-death was very rare, and people were content to settle for just regular death. Once in a while, someone became very sick, nearly dies, gets better, comes back, tells a story. But things changed in the 1960s. In 1956, mouth-to-mouth resuscitation was introduced to the world of medical science. In 1960, the American Heart Association started a program to acquaint physicians with a new medical breakthrough that combined mouth-to-mouth resuscitation with chest compressions, that is, CPR, and suddenly we were pulling people back from death, and suddenly reports started happening. By 1975, physicians had coined the term near-death experience to describe what their patients were reporting. Medical research shows that nearly 20% of people who suffer cardiac arrest and also reach a point of clinical death but are then resuscitated will remember having an out-of-body NDE while they should have been unconscious, clinically dead. 20%. That's a lot. But those are just the ones who remember it. I suspect the other 80% just don't remember. Researchers into NDEs estimate that as many as 750 people will have the experience today, just in the United States. So it's not uncommon, not anymore. Data from surveys suggest that as much as 4% of the population can report having had some type of NDE. Reports of the experience have also come from all over the world, but they are remarkably similar. So you have reports from China, India, Thailand, Tibet, Japan, Australia, Germany, Chile, Guam, Scandinavia, Canada, New Zealand, Hawaii, you name it. And all the reports have some basic similarities. If the NDE is just a hallucination of random dreams created by a flood of hormones from an oxygen-starved brain, it's strange that the hallucination would be the same from person to person. And moreover, it's strange that people would not feel that they had been hallucinating. Instead, experiencers consistently claimed that the experience they underwent was more real than real. And it made this reality, by comparison, seem like it was the hallucination. Medical science has lots of theories for what actually happens to the brain to create an NDE, but none of their theories have ever been tested or verified, and none of them are able to explain how the experiencers are aware of things going on around them while their bodies are supposed to be clinically dead. The first thing most people report is confusion. They suddenly find themselves floating, looking down at their bodies. They notice that all sensation of pain is suddenly gone. And then they notice their body below them, laying on the floor or on the emergency room table or whatever the case, and it's surprising and disorienting to see your body from the outside. One guy in a documentary said, "I saw myself lying on the floor, and I remember thinking, I thought I was a better-looking guy than that." Even blind people have reported seeing. At first, the soul suffers some confusion. What's going on? Is that me? Sometimes people will claim to have seen the medical team working on their body to resuscitate them and be able to identify who was in the room, and they can describe everything that happened. They remember feeling like things were sharper, everything clearer, like their minds were suddenly much faster, making multiple observations simultaneously. They also report being able to look through and move through walls or instantaneously be in a different place, time and space falling away as irrelevant. Very often, toward a great bright light and sense of love. Most report a profound sense of peace, bliss, perfect contentment, and perfect love. They encounter deceased loved ones, sacred figures, angelic beings, and communicate with them inaudibly, without words, thought to thought. At some point in the experience, there is a life review, not unlike the common saying, "I saw my life flash before my eyes," and they undergo a complete review of every moment and every detail as if reliving it all, but instantaneously, and revealing one's life not just from one's own perspective, but also through the perspectives of others with whom we interacted. Some report a flood of knowledge of life, the nature of the universe, and some report a conversation with a divine being, with God himself. Some are given the option of returning to the body. Others are told they must go back because they have left some mission unfinished. The people who have these experiences are not necessarily religious people at all, but after the experience, they are transformed. Those who did not believe in life after death do now. Those who are afraid of death no longer are. People who have this experience return with a completely new perspective, and they commonly report that they have realized that the important thing is to love one another and to live good and righteous lives of sacrificial love for others. That's sort of a thumbnail sketch of the NDE. Not all of them are so pleasant. Not everyone has a good trip. And many people come back to report that they didn't get to go into the light, but that their journey took a different turn, a darker turn. We'll talk about that another time. This time, I've taken the time to familiarize you with the phenomenon, because as we study the world of souls, I'll be referring to things learned from near-death experiencers. We will be looking at some of these stories and exploring them further as we continue to study the world of souls. But let's be careful, because we are treading on hallowed ground, peeking behind the veil. And the veil is there for a good reason. When you're in a cemetery, you're supposed to be careful not to tread over a grave. The world of souls is a strange place, and we don't even have a map. So let's keep our eyes and our hope firmly fixed upon our master, the one who went through something more than a near-death experience. Rather, he did die and was dead and remained dead until on the third day, his consciousness returned to his body, and his body came back to life, not resuscitated, and not even resurrected back to its original mortal state, but resurrected into a new type of body, a spiritual body, which is not subject to the limitations of this world, but rather he possesses a physical body created for the world of souls, created for the world to come. As Paul says, the body is sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body. If there is a natural body, there is also a spiritual body. But what about between now and then, between the time the natural body is sown, that is buried in the earth, and the time that it is raised up as a spiritual body, that is at the resurrection? Is there immediate survival after death? Is it true that consciousness goes on, uninterrupted, so to speak, like the master said to the thief on the cross, "Today you will be with me in Gan Eden"? Or like David said regarding his child, "Can I bring him back again? He will not return to me, but I will go to him." Or as Paul said, "I desire to depart and be with the Messiah, for that is very much better." The near-death experience suggests that it's all true, that the Bible is true, that there is an afterlife awaiting us whether we like it or not. There is immediate survival of consciousness, the soul lives on, and moreover, it must give an account for its deeds in the flesh. Those who return from the experience say that their lives are changed. They aren't the same. They realize what's really important now, and it's not what they thought was important before. They are no longer interested in the successes and pleasures of materialism. They realize that life is about others and how we treat one another, and loving your neighbor as yourself. And if that's the message, then we shouldn't need to go beyond the veil to start living now as if we have. As Paul says, we are to regard ourselves as already dead, as if we have died to ourselves and been resurrected with Messiah, so that it is no longer I who live, but Messiah who lives through me. In other words, every disciple of Yeshua is to live as if we have already had the near-death experience, dying with Messiah, and now living back to life with him. But the life we now live is not our own.
Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.